Kate Manahan, thank you for joining me for the 238th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Brian Evans-Jones, who was born in Wales, raised in England, and calls Sussex, England, home. He's a poet, teacher, and writing guide, living with his family in South Berwick, Maine, since 2014. It's such a pleasure to actually be in your backyard in South Berwick today. Thanks for having me, Brian.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming down to see the house and interview me.
Yes, we had technical difficulties, but we don't live that far apart, so we're doing a socially distanced interview in the backyard by a giant wood pile that you've just created.
That's right, five cords, yeah.
Five cords. That's wonderful. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what your life looked like as a boy growing up in England. Were you moving cords of wood around? Can you help us imagine your boyhood home a bit?
Sure. Well, I had several boyhood homes. My dad's company believed in moving their managers around quite a lot, so we lived in several different places. So I was born in Aberystwyth, Wales, but then we moved to the island of Jersey. Although I was too small to remember that. First place I remember is Hampshire, which is in the south of England. I lived there for several years, and then my parents' last move was to Sussex, West Sussex, which is again along the south coast of England. So that's mainly where I remember the most. I grew up in a little town called Midhurst, which is a few thousand people, and it's in the middle of the South Downs National Park, which is a really one of the most beautiful areas of England. So very lots of soft, gentle, rolling hills and beautiful farmland, lots of old buildings, thatched cottages, village squares, pubs. So a lot of rural English history there. And yeah, so I grew up in a small town, able to look out and see hills and fields always from my window. Went to school in a neighbouring town, which was slightly bigger, but not much different. And spent a lot of time out cycling, walking the dog, enjoying the environment out there.
I imagine, as a poet, you've always had a knack for seeing things from a somewhat unique perspective. When did you realise that poetry was calling you?
I realised kind of late, actually, that it was really calling me. I was aware of poetry from young because my grandmother wrote poems, and the first poem I ever wrote, well, I barely wrote it, but she sat down with me when I was five and we wrote a poem about looking out on a tree from the window of the house where we were living then. So it was sort of in the background, and then it was encouraged by one of my English teachers when I was about fifth grade, but it didn't really leap out at me until I was 16 and I studied the poems of an English First World War poet called Wilfred Owen, whose work is just amazing, and it really spoke to me, and I started writing at that point. But it literally took me another almost 20 years before I really accepted that I was a poet first and foremost. I still imagined that I was going to be a novelist, a fiction writer. But over the last 10 to 12 years, fiction has dropped out of my life and I just do poetry now.
Yes, I wonder, you know, how hard would it be to be a 16-year-old and say I'm going to be a poet?
Well, for me, it was very difficult. I kept it hidden for a long time. It didn't really seem like an acceptable thing for a 16-year-old boy to do. But through my teaching in schools and teaching kids one-to-one, I've met a lot of young people who are very willing to say that they want to be poets now. So I'm not sure if that's a cultural shift, or perhaps it's easier over here in America for people to say that, but it's very welcome to see it.
How might the world have responded to you then if you had said that?
I got the impression that the world would kind of laugh at me and not take it seriously, so that was why I didn't share for a long time. I kind of wish I had. It would have been great to have gotten feedback and guidance earlier on.
You know, it takes a lot of guts to say what's really in your heart. But I don't think you were especially old when you decided you could do that. I'm so glad you did, putting all your beautiful words into the world. In 2012 and 2013, you were selected to be the Poet Laureate of Hampshire, England. Part of that job involved writing poetry of your own, but a large part was also outreach to the public schools and prisons and the like. I wondered if you could tell us about the project you were working on there, about tying poetry to places, physical places in that community.
Sure, yes. So every Hampshire poet had a chance to initiate something to sort of bring poetry to the people of Hampshire. But mostly they'd been kind of physically located in one place. Like, so one poet started up a poetry cafe in Winchester, the city where I was living, which was great, but it wasn't very accessible to people living on the fringes of the county. So I wanted to do something which would be open to everybody in the whole county, and indeed visitors as well. So I had the idea of making a map of the county that would be connected, where places on the county would be connected with poems about those places. So it's sort of like a Google map with pins, and every time you clicked on a pin, a poem would come up, and the pin would attach the poem to the place in Hampshire that it was about.
That's so cool as an interactive tool.
Yeah, it was fun. So we got poems about all parts of the county, from the beauty spots in the natural world that you might expect, through to parking lots and marshes, and a really funny one about a roundabout, so a large traffic intersection that you not a place you'd expect to inspire a poem, but it was one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that. And of course, living in a town, you know the highlights, but you also know what just feels like home when you round that corner or see that big tree or empty parking lot or whatever.
Yeah, it was great to see what people wrote about, and it was a really I really enjoyed taking it into the community and running workshops themed around this map, which was called Writing Hampshire. I went to a lot of schools and got the children writing about places that they knew, and for many of them, I think they hadn't realised that the kind of things they did and the places they went to could be interesting enough to anybody else that they would want to read a poem about it. But then they found that they could write something that they enjoyed and their classmates enjoyed, and many of them submitted their poems to the map as well, which was good to see.
That's really sweet. Yeah, they realised that they live there too.
Yeah, and they realise the places they live in are important, even if to them these places are, you know, every day, they barely notice them. And for some of them, I remember one kid writing about his local playground, and he would have been about 12, and he was writing about how he wished the older kids would not leave broken glass there and syringes and things like that. He was living in a tough part of Portsmouth, Hampshire, England, not Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And it was a really moving poem, and his friends were saying, oh yeah, we feel like that too. And it really, he had a chance to say something very important to him and realise within the school and on the map as well that others were feeling the same way and that his places were important.
And in fact, he makes that place in the community matter more. I bet still when certain kids go by that park, they probably still think of him back in third grade or whatever that was.
Yeah, I bet they do, yes.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So would you be willing to read us a poem that you've written about place?
Sure. I thought I'd read one that was about both South Berwick and England as well. So this is from a few years ago. This is closer to when I arrived here in South Berwick that I wrote this, and I called it Immigrant on Main Street, and it owes something to a poem by the poet Naomi Shihab Nye. Immigrant on Main Street. I live like I don't know what I've lost. My days, so industrious, so apparently full, are so far away. When I write on the common, when I say hi back to the pharmacy guy and look at his tag for a name, when the cardinal flits like a spark, when I stop by the river, there's a void taking me to milder hills, a more forgiving sun. I hold to no truths but this one. Wherever is home, never feels so. Always I'm longing for some sign, a hazel tree, an English robin. America stretches away as a crowd of faces. The trees are policemen about to shoot.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Brian Evans-Jones. He's from Sussex, England, and now lives in South Berwick, Maine. And he's just read you a poem about his own experience as an immigrant on the main streets of South Berwick. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. And just in case anyone doesn't realize that the bird that's called a robin in America is different from the bird that's called a robin in England.
Yours is quite a bit dustier and more subtle, right?
Yeah, and smaller. Much.
And smaller. Yeah. I'm fond of the podcast called Bird Notes, and it's just a 3-minute podcast per bird. I enjoyed that one on robins recently. That's the only way I knew.
I'll have to look that up. That sounds interesting. I'd love to know more about the American birds here. I mean, when I got here and first saw a robin and someone said, oh, there's a robin, I thought, no, it's not. That's not a robin, because it just didn't look the same. But I'm not a great ornithologist, but I do love how colourful the birds are here, the blue jays and the cardinals. We don't have that much colour in our birds in Britain.
Well, you said in your poem, the spark of a cardinal, and I wondered, are you unfamiliar with them?
Yeah. I have another poem about cardinals as well. I think they're astounding. They love to sit on that apple tree just over there in the winter, and then sort of red against the white of the snow is just amazing.
Well, make sure you listen to the cardinal episode of Bird Notes as well.
I will.
Named for the leaders of the church. Speaking of place, I wondered what you have observed, as you mentioned in that poem, from your immigrant's eye, with your fresh perspective, when you look at Maine during this election cycle compared to where you're from in England. How does this all sort out differently to your eye?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
I mean, completely differently is one way of putting it. One of the things that I noticed pretty much as soon as we arrived, because 2014, I think there were some elections going on, although it wasn't a presidential year or anything, was all the signs along the side of the road. I've gotten more used to them now, but there's nothing like that in Britain. And it was just astonishing to see the variety of signs for the huge variety of different places you can be elected to, the different chambers, different levels of government, different roles, and the sheer number of things, positions that are voted on here is much greater than I was used to in Britain.
You don't vote for your sheriff, for instance?
No, don't vote for sheriff. You wouldn't vote for the person equivalent to the attorney general in a state. You wouldn't vote, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't vote for members of the school board. There would be an equivalent of the select men, I think. But in general, there's a lot more grassroots level democracy that I see very visually happening on the side of the road, and of course at the ballot boxes as well.
Yeah, and you're down here in South Berwick, so that's southern Maine. Really southern Maine,
yeah.
And you're not. You said you could walk to New Hampshire in 10 minutes.
Yes. Where I'm sitting now, New Hampshire is just behind me. if you had a really good arm, you might be able to throw a stone into it.
Oh, really?
Across the Salmon Falls River. Yeah, we can see New Hampshire from our yard, and I can walk to Rollinsford, New Hampshire in less than 10 minutes probably.
So when you came from Hampshire to New Hampshire environs, you were telling me earlier you could tell a difference just between New Hampshire and Maine. I think we forget to see those borders, especially in the middle of the state. Could you say a little bit about that? I thought that was so interesting.
Sure. Well, okay, so from the English perspective, we have counties, which are a little bit more important, I think, than the American county. They're closer to the state. There's no divisions between county and the national level. But in general, the schooling and the healthcare and things like that are going to be pretty similar. But I noticed, I felt there was more of a clear difference between New Hampshire and Maine, because we rented an apartment in Dover, New Hampshire, and we were looking around and we came to South Berwick and found the house we wanted. So then we were going back and forth, and even just crossing the border on the road from Dover to Dover, New Hampshire to here, South Berwick, I mean, as soon as I'm across the border, the speed limit goes down by 10 miles an hour. And as far as I can see, it's basically because I've crossed from one state to another. The taxation is different, of course. So we don't pay any tax if we go to the grocery store in Dover, New Hampshire. I mean, it was very clear during the coronavirus lockdown stuff as well. New Hampshire locked down much sooner. So I mean, it's a border town, and definitely conscious of New Hampshire just over there. But as soon as we moved here, I was very aware that everyone here really does think of themselves as Maine. That we're not kind of an outpost of New Hampshire. We're definitely part of Maine. And I've heard that Mainers say that if you're south of Portland, you're still in Massachusetts. But I that doesn't seem true to me. I'm sure it's very different here from further up north and out east, down east and so on. But I think people here are very conscious of being part of Maine, and I certainly am.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said the other day that you find yourself looking northward a lot, which is interesting because here we are in the northeast and the rest of the population of the whole country is south and west of here.
Yeah.
But you've turned your sights up to Augusta from here, which is funny because once you get this far down, you're often thinking Portsmouth and Boston.
But yeah, in terms of sort of politics or state affairs, definitely thinking about what's happening in Augusta, what's happening in Portland as well for art and teaching. And I've been connected with various things in the arts and arts education in Maine. So I've been going up north to do those things.
You mentioned there, and I know you have been all over the state as part of the Maine Arts Commission Leadership Initiative. You've been from Van Buren to Portland's Telling Room. You've mentored and taught and judged Maine's High School Poetry Out Loud participants. And you've collaborated with Marshwood Middle School's chorus teacher to inspire lyrics from local students. Now, with COVID, you're focusing on supporting poets in a totally different format, and I wondered if you could tell us about the Poetry Parlor. What's that all about, and how can people find you there?
Sure. Poetry Parlor is a monthly membership club for poets who like writing poetry and would like to write more poetry and particularly want to learn how to write better poetry. And I'm talking adults here rather than school kids. So there's a fairly simple structure. Every month I choose a poem that we read and talk about, and there's an online Zoom meeting where we do that. And each of those poems I choose to try and teach people something about a particular technique or approach in poetry that they can use. And then I set them a prompt, an exercise to do, which takes those lessons and lets them put it into their own form. And then we share those poems. We have our own Facebook group where members give each other feedback. And I also give members feedback in a personal, individualized way through videos and meetings so that people can, and this is working out, I think, can take their poetry forward. Because I've been teaching poetry it's formally and informally to various people for probably about 20 years, and it's a tough thing to learn in many ways. There are just so many different techniques and forms and approaches and styles. And it can be really overwhelming, which I found myself when I was beginning. It took me a long time to really get to grips with what was possible and how I could negotiate my way through all of that stuff. Well, still learning that. It's a lifelong thing. And I was really lucky to be able to go to college twice to help myself do that, undergraduate and MFA postgraduate. And I thought I would really like to pass this on to people who are maybe not in a position to do that. It costs a lot, takes a lot of time. Poetry Parlor doesn't require that much of commitment in either money or time, but it is something that where I see members really improving rapidly and consistently from month to month, because they're getting a chance to learn just a little bit more every month without having to figure it out for themselves.
I love that format because it's quite doable. You study one, it's kind of like the medical, see one, do one, teach one. You know, you study one, you try an exercise, you share and see what other people are creating. It's a really great model for learning. Get your hands on, get dirty.
Yeah. I mean, the two main things for learning to write are read a lot and write a lot. So it's definitely got both of those in.
You really channeled that from your elementary school teacher, your middle school, high school teacher.
Actually, that's a quotation from Stephen King.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Here comes a helicopter.
Maybe it's Stephen King. Nope, looks like it's moving off. We can resume. Okay.
So Stephen King does end up teaching a lot of people about how to be a better writer.
Yeah, I mean, he's not writing poetry, but his book on writing has some good tips. That read a lot, write a lot is super important. I mean, my third one to that is read a lot, write a lot, and get wise feedback, because that saves you a lot of time.
And that's really true. And I saw on your website it said this would be good for people who aren't afraid to get, you know, the people who this wouldn't be good for are people who already have an MFA and people who don't like to get feedback.
Yes. And that's a perfectly fine way of writing poetry. And there are plenty of people who just write it because they like to write it. And then when they've written it, they're done and they're happy. And that's fine. But I really am looking for the people who know that there's more to know and would like to expand what they can do.
Yeah, it's an iterative process, and it's hard to see, you know, your own work.
Yeah, yes.
Tell me about that process for you at some point, when you came up against feeling like you were done, but you were kind of forced to go back to it and dig a little deeper, and you ended up liking so much more your finished product.
Well, multiple times on my MFA at University of New Hampshire, I would get feedback on a poem that I didn't like because it was telling me, you know, throw away this lot and just concentrate on this one aspect of it. And I would be thinking, no, I like that stuff. And there was nobody better at doing that than Charlie Simic. But yeah, I can think of two poems in particular. One was actually inspired by the library here in South Berwick, which is a fantastic building. It's a converted Catholic church, and it's just a wonderful space to go in and kind of be with books, which to me are holy. So a formally sanctified building is a great place for it. And I wrote a really kind of fantastical piece about being a librarian, which was enormously full of language, lots of long lines, in the manner of Kenneth Coke, if anyone's familiar with him. And the workshop feedback really was, this is too long, it's too diffuse, it doesn't kind of make enough sense, and I was annoyed with that. And then when I came to rewrite it, it turned into a much shorter poem about just one particular imaginary librarian. And so that was a really good example of getting feedback I didn't want, which somehow rattled around in my unconscious and then helped me make something which I'm sure is a better poem as a result of it. It's funny how it's always the feedback that you don't like that takes you the farthest.
Yeah, it's the hardest to hear.
Yeah.
Julia Cameron wrote The Artist's Way, and she writes in there, you know, if you don't have enough time to do all the exercises, do the one you're most drawn to, the one you're most repulsed from and another one, you know. And I think, yeah, sometimes we really have to do what's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Including rewrite our poem that we thought was so good the first time.
Yeah.
I have a feeling you have a gentle way of giving that direction and feedback to your students.
I definitely pay a lot of attention to what's working already in a poem. Because every time you write a poem and send it out for someone to look at, it is like sharing your baby. And so it's really unfair to come in with a list of things that aren't working or need changing. It doesn't respect the effort and the soul that the writer has put into it. That's just my rule now, is, you know, start by appreciating.
So what's your hope in 5 years? What kind of poet will you be? What kind of work will you be doing? Will you be here in South Berwick, you think?
Yeah, I certainly hope to be in South Berwick. What do I see? Yes, definitely living here. What kind of poet would I like to be? Well, I'm currently challenging myself to do something I haven't yet done, which is work on a book project. And that's something I've shied away from because it's a much bigger challenge than writing poem by poem individually. So I definitely want to have written that and got it out into the world by the time we get to 5 years, and I'm sure that will teach me a lot.
I hope you do that. I'd like to read it.
Thank you.
If people want to find you for the Poetry Parlor, can you give them your website so they might look you up?
Sure, it's brianevansjones.com, with an S on the end of the Evans and no other punctuation or hyphens or anything.
Great, and I'll make a link to that on the New Manners Speak site.
Thank you.
Brian, you're a joy to visit with. You're so kind and bright and insightful, and it's so fun to be outside and actually with you here in your backyard. I hope listeners enjoyed the chickadee that came to visit us and the the things flying overhead. It's just a delight. Thank you, and I appreciate you being my guest today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and it's been fun to do, and thank you for coming to the house.
And thank you all for listening. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmannersspeak.com. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Brian has selected for us. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about why you chose this song while you introduce it.
So this is Follow My Feet by Polly and the Billets Doux. Despite the French name, Polly and the Billets Doux were a band based in Winchester in Hampshire, England, where I was living before I moved here, and my wife and I went to see them a couple of times before we had kids. And they're really a lot of fun. And as well as being sort of the Winchester band that I thought of, they're also very influenced by American blues and folk and gospel even. So it seemed like a good way of linking. And Follow My Feet is a very positive song about making your way places and making things work for you, which I felt like was a very appropriate song for immigration and going somewhere because you wanted to start a new life, which was our reason for coming. So I hope listeners will enjoy it.
Thank you. Follow Your Feet. Upon a time, my life was planned. My destiny was in another's hand. He had me stopping and starting, coming and going. Days of the week I have no way of knowing, so I have to get out of that system. Yeah, I had to find a different beat. I had to get out. At first it wasn't